going on, everybody? This is the Google News Update, and this is episode 6, I believe, and this is your host, Michael Baker. What's going on, everybody? Always with me, I got my host here, Mike Bennett.
What up?
What's going on, man? How you feeling?
Man, I got the sniffles, man, but, you know, we chugging through, man. It's just the season, but
yeah.
We're about to get it in.
It's going around. It's catching everybody, bro. It's catching no matter what, where you at in the country, everybody getting it.
Down here in Atlanta, man, it was like, it's crazy. It was like 70 degrees last week, and now it's 35 degrees. So global warming, or they doing something with the climate, I don't know. But
yeah. I mean, like 57 today, which is weird because it's been like in the 30s for the past couple weeks. So it's definitely, you know, according to our leaders, you know, global warming ain't real, so I don't know what could be going on. But what's going on, everybody? Today we're going to be talking about Google, of course, and a couple of topics that we got today is going to be about Google and their real-time language translation and having real-time translation in the palm of your hands. Google having to be served a $166 million fine by France, by the country of France, for abusing their online ad market because, you know, they're one of the most dominant advertisers on the platform in the world today. Apparently they're abusing it. And the last topic is talking about after a bumpy launch, how Google Stadia is forging and adding a new indie developer team, Typhoon, and how they're bringing them into the fold for Google Stadia. I think that'll be a good fit for him. I'll explain to a little bit. But so for the first topic that we have, I am kind of still getting over my little cold. But first topic that we have is talking about Google and their real-time language translation and how that's basically in the palm of your hands now. Google has been working with, like, text-to-speech technology, artificial intelligence technology, having like a digital assistant for a long time. And they've been working on translation for even longer, I think. I mean, basically since I mean, they are a global company. And for the most part, they've released, like, I want to say like 2010, they released a plugin on Internet Explorer and like Firefox before Chrome even was a thing, where they allow for you to do translation for websites, where all you have to do essentially click on and say the type of language that you speak, and it will essentially translate that website into the language that you...
I remember that. Yeah, they did come up with
it. I mean, now it's almost like instantaneous. If you use Google Chrome, basically if you just go to a website and it's out of language, it'll ask you immediately, do you want it to be translated to the other language? But like, for a while, it was initially like it was a couple step process where you had to sort of initialize it yourself. But I mean, they've been doing translation for a while now, and I guess now it is almost coming to fruition to a point where it's just instantaneous, where you can basically ask Google Assistant for interpretation.
It says in the first line here, it says in the article, says Google's real-time language translation tool Interpreter Mode is now accessible on mobile devices.
Right.
So, I mean, it's something that's been the talk of the town for some time. I actually follow a couple other YouTubers, man. And a guy, he goes by the name Mediocre Tutorials and Reviews. I don't know, maybe one of these days we could probably have more, but he's in the IT industry, like heavy in IT. And he actually is working, I think, if not for Google, something along the lines of like dealing with like interpretation, like AI and interpretation and stuff. And this is something that's big because a part of why this is such a key component, it comes of always down to like commerce. And then, you know, the more and more people are able to connect beyond the barrier of language, the more and more like people I feel like can move forward based on things he was saying that makes sense. And we said that one of the things that they, for some time, of course, they kind of had some things on lock. If you would go to Google Translate, I think that I've seen the progression of it over the course of time, because doing with the marketing I've done on the side, I've always noticed like when I'm trying to do something for like a client, but they may speak Spanish, something like that. several times I noticed that I'll put in a certain phrase and it will change. Like what it was 2 years ago is not what it was today. And that's what's so, I think what's so interesting about it is because what's happening with these translations is starting to find its way to talk, like to be able to translate and understand, I guess, normal conversation. Like there's so many different Spanish, I guess, it may be the most spoken language in the United States now, right? I think statistically,
World, it may be one of the top spoken languages because it's in South America and, you know, Spain did most of the colonization of the world. So,
right. You know, that's the thing. I am going to cut you off, but what's interesting about this is that which we bring up with Spanish is that there's all different types of Spanish. Like, you know, you have traditional, like you have actual Spain Spanish, right? You have Latin American Spanish. They all have their different like interjections. Integrations with like other type of, you like Portuguese. I didn't even know that, like, I think in Chile or like one of those South American countries that have like a Spanish that has like Italian words in it, something like that. So if you think about like what's going on with the language translation, where they at now, they're moving towards being able to not only like tell the difference between like a language with different dialects, but also like pick up on the regular conversational, what you call the, Ebonics is not, I guess, a good word for it. What's the word for it? You know, like, just regular comment with certain things that how you would say, I guess, box in Spain Spanish is different than how you would say it in regular conversation.
Yeah, it's like localized grammar, like how certain people just from being in that location, you tend to talk like there's English, but then there's like Baltimore English. Like,
right. Exactly.
Like there's like grammatical changes based on just where you are locally. That is a little bit different. It could be the same word, but it's essentially used differently here than it is over there. And yeah, I mean, that's being able to have those understandings as well. That's something that a company like Google really is in a unique place because, they can do translation, but then they can also identify based on what your locality is to say what type of English translation or what type of Spanish translation, like, is it just pure straight up Spanish or is it like
Spanglish?
Yeah, Spanglish type. Yeah, exactly. I actually still have it on my phone. I always tend to keep it on my phone actually. The Google Translate app, and for a while that actually does do essentially real time translation. You can click on it. You choose the two languages. You can click on it and start having a conversation between the two people back and forth. But like, it's kind of a step and go process. Like you have to fully say a thought and then complete the thought. It'll translate it. The other person reads it. And then they have to fully say a thought. It translates it. And then you read it. But it basically does work. This idea, what they're talking about is being able to implement it in Google Assistant, where you can basically just say, hey, Google, translate in this language for me now. And it'll just do it. So you don't even have to touch anything.
Simultaneously.
And like what I want to see, like I was saying, I think a while ago, I was talking about that Babelfish, like having a translator in your ear. I wonder how it would work with like long distance, like telephone calls. Like, let me call somebody. And I don't even have to hear them, their voice in their language. Like I call somebody, I start talking in the phone. On their end, it gives the translation. They start talking in their language and it sends back me just the translation. And I don't even have to worry about like, I don't have to go through that weird phase of let it translate because the separation of being on the phone, because you know, using this stuff in real time, like if I had the phone and I had the app for translation on my phone, I'm standing there next to the person and I'm talking to them and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna say this in the phone and it's going to translate. And then you say this in the phone and then it translates. Like, it's kind of weird when you're standing there in front of each other. But if I'm on the phone and I'm essentially talking to like a machine, a middleman machine, where it's like, the middleman is doing the translation between us, but we don't really see it, and it's sort of seamless. Whereas, like, I'm just talking to the middleman. The middleman's talking to that dude. Yeah. That dude's talking back to the middleman and talking to me. Man, that's like you're talking about, like, the change, like, being able to have commerce and sort of get communication out of the way to have that not be a barrier anymore, where you basically just communicate in real time and everybody can translate with everybody. Like, that's going to be a major key. Like you were talking about with localized communication, you know, there are those little hiccups where it's kind of hard to catch on to the particulars of that language in that community, but everybody still sort of understands, like, the standard of their language.
Yeah.
So, like, even if you don't really fully get it, like, if you had, like, basic education of your language, you should be able to still, like, pull it back a little bit and talk in a standard that the computer can understand.
Right. I'm thinking I wanted to get to a point where, like, if I'm, like, say, you know, we're from Baltimore, you know, we talk how we talk, and say I want to go over to, you know what I'm saying, go to Spain, holler one of these Spain shorties, and I would be like, what's up, dummy?
Yeah.
it would translate to, hey, gorgeous, how you doing? Like, that. Yeah. That if it gets to that level, then it's like that's something that's like this next level, man. I don't know how.
Yeah, I mean, and most of that, I think it would require having being a middleman and common communication. Like, it has to have a period where it can learn that. Yeah, I mean, like mm-hmm. how we learn it. Yeah, I mean, like we learn to use the term dummy and whatnot just because of usage in the everyday community. Like, you just talk mm-hmm. and you talk to your friends, somebody use the word dummy and you put it into context. Right. I mean, like, they would have to be part of that conversation so that they can learn, because, you know, they got AI associated with it. They got to be able to learn that context. I mean, right now, most of the stuff ain't really even context. It's just learning. It's just spitting out answers to questions.
Do you think, I guess that brings the question, we can go on about this, man, but it makes it brings the question, like, do you think AI will get to a point where it will, like, have intuition? Because that's what you, I feel like what you're getting at when you say that, like, for instance, like in our localized language, how we talk, you know, our slang terms and stuff like that. If somebody was to say dummy, say it's the first time, right? Mm-hmm. But you can tell, like, he, you know, he's the homie or whatever case is, how he say it. Intuitively, you can pick up, like, it's not, it's more of like endearment rather than disrespect. But right. Like, you think that are we getting to a point where AI is able to tell that? Like, okay, intuitively, this is what's happening.
I think it will require AI having more senses. Like, right now, I mean, if we're trying to just do it based off of verbal communication, it really only has verbal communication. It has the written language to work off of. Mm. I mean, like, it doesn't have, like, social cues. Like, we have a lot of, like what they say, what we always say, communication is like, you know, talking is like 10% of communication.
Yeah.
Like, the other 90% is body language, context, where you're at, things like that. And like that, yeah. You don't have to actually say those things because those are already implied. And that's based on our other senses of, you know, our awareness of what's going on at the time. For machines to be able to do that, they would have to be able to participate in that awareness process. Mm-hmm. Like, it would have to be like a camera in the room seeing that you're in a room to say, all right, these things in the room are also happening. So if I talk about this microphone right now, the camera can see that I'm talking, that a microphone is in here. So I must be talking about this microphone. I mean, like, it has to have more senses in the room. I mean, and that's another question, like, how far in the senses of the game are we going? Like, we having things see us, have it. I mean, there's only so many senses. You got touch, hear, like, touch, taste, smell, sight, and seeing. I mean, hearing, what? I don't even know all my senses. Only got five senses.
Five.
We only got those five, and being able to recreate those for machines, and then giving them the sixth sense, which is what I always consider the sixth sense, is putting all of those together and interpretation. I mean, like, understanding what all of those mean to us individually, and essentially giving a machine that sixth sense, that form of intuition. It requires having more things around it, having more senses to understand the world that it's in.
Have a holistic sense, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we're working on that. I mean, we're working on that every second when they selling those daggone portable video cameras, those video chat cameras. Like, you know, they don't mention the fact that they collecting the data, collecting the video, treating the AI a little bit better so that they can learn how to do image recognition in your
just
video.
Get a little prompt saying, yeah, would you send this data back to
I mean, like, we just trying to make the tool better. We ain't saying what all this other stuff that we doing. We just trying to make it better for you. I mean, like, but yeah, they collecting all this data so that they can do exactly that. And I mean, if something is aware to able to see you, if it's able to see you in the world, you might have better contacts. If it sees that I'm hugging this dude and then I call him a dummy at the same time, he might be my friend. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. it had to go through those motions, though. Yeah, I mean, like, or else it's just going to think a dummy is a dummy based on what it did. And
based on what the definition is.
Yeah, on what the definition of a dummy is. Like, it's going to just use it wrong. And I mean, it takes that time, but more senses that we put to it, the more awareness we give to it, more questions are going to arise, more regulation have to arise.
Right, man, because we got to slow it down.
we starting to do too much. But I mean, I'll allow a company like Google to do it because, you know, they care. they actually trying. Yeah, I mean, they trying to do the stuff with worldly purposes. They ain't immediately turning this stuff over to money. Well, not really, because based on this next article, they turning this stuff over to money, man. Because Google just got fined $166 billion for abusing their advertisement practices by the country of France. You know, Google is
6 M's, dog.
I mean, and really, that ain't nothing to Google, but to me, that's my life. Yeah, I mean, like
that's
Google.
That's my whole family, blood and honey.
Yeah, I have 166 million. I have to force myself to continue working at that point. Yeah. I mean, like if you can't just give me that, like I can't just give that because I'm just quit everything and I'm just gonna go off the grid. But Google has been fined $166 million by France because of their practices with advertisement. Google is probably the number one digital advertiser out there now. I say Facebook is number two, and then probably Amazon number three. But you know, they essentially offer advertisements for the world based on whatever website you're on, whatever application you're using. They track your data, and France really is having issues with the way that Google uses their platform and how they determine what is a good advertisement and how they like the characteristics of when you're creating an advertisement placement and when you're essentially critiquing your advertisement to reach your particular audience, like the demographic stats that you use, things that you're filtering out for the audience you want your advertisements to reach. France is saying that Google doesn't give enough information about how their algorithm actually works and how they actually narrow down and target their audience. So it's sort of like it's sort of like a system where the client essentially or agency will essentially just go into Google Ads, they create the advertisement, they do pick out a certain model, critique the information about who they want the average, the demographic, like they want, they organize on who they want it to reach, but a lot of it is still, at the end of the day, a mystery on how it chooses how it actually gets that ad to you, and all you know at the end of the day is that supposedly it got to this person and Google billed you a lot of money for it. And it's just really a black box of advertising, and you like they don't want you to know on like they do it for the middleman purpose. They don't really want you to get access to a particular client or a particular potential customer, so they sort of hide it. They don't say if you want to be able to get an advertisement to Michael, like this is how you can get an ad to Mike, but they give characteristics that I might fall under. I mean, so like they give you like general data, in this case, they were talking about using keywords, and like amongst all the other demographic, using keywords to be able to find like to target your audience, and saying that that's not enough, and it's kind of what's the proper term? It's vague. It's very vague.
Ambiguous on, about
yeah.
I think that what I see with this, bro, is that it's so when I read through the article, I'm looking at it and they're saying it's like it's difficult. Like right here, it says that specifically the methods Google used were difficult to understand. They said, and then that's when Google was forced to like clarify the rules of how the ads work. And I think where what's happening, because I've tried, you know, I do advertising, and what happens is on the surface level, it's different things that goes into advertising, especially on the Google platform, is that a lot of what you directly have control over, right? As far as if you say you want to target people in certain areas and stuff like that, or like certain keywords, you're basically going off of demographics. Like that's what you submit, like your demographic, which is like, you know, age and like area and stuff like that. But what happens, it seems like once you give those demographics and you start to then follow that person's actions, like you pixel them or something like that, then you start to study or go after people based off of their psychographics, which is different in the sense of like monitoring how basically coming up, having a conclusion of what this person's actions are and where to target them on certain things, like how they think. It's almost like if you see me constantly going to a certain site and you look that people go to this site for certain things, you kind of get an idea of the type of person I am and like why I would go there. Right. So then it'll, you know, in the sense when you're like looking at it psychographically, is like you'll find like an ad place somewhere where almost like that's where that weird thing happens. If you notice where if like some people will say it, like they'll be thinking about something in their brain and then like they go on the internet and see like it pops up. So like, how that happens is, what's happening is that it's determining from that person's demographics and their actions with their
psychographics. I just said that.
Exactly. And I think that's where, you know, I'm saying
they're fighting
to get me in there to get them off this case. But what's happening is that, you know, by that, they're determining these people's psychographics. And that's where it gets a little bit spooky. You know what I mean? Almost like your mind reading. So it's something where because they're not really doing good, it sounds like Google's not doing a good job trying to explain themselves in the sense of they're probably feeling like, you know, why do I explain stuff? You know what I mean? Because I'm Google. Yeah. But really, I feel like that's what's really happening here, is why it's like this fine came out of nowhere, is that these people, I guess France doesn't really understand that sense of advertising. That after a while, when you're tracking people's like their clicks and like sites that they frequent, you can pick up when their psychographics or how they think. And then what happens is Google then, because, you know, you have your reports and stuff like that, they'll turn that information, or, you know, if you have either one to control the advertising, you can go to see what the KPIs are. And then from there, you can determine what the next point of attack is, per se, like where to go. So I think that it's something where Google should jump in and say that. I just think that if they did that, they run the risk of, you know, their methods of how they make money being put out there completely.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's part of it.
You like, never want to put that, you know, you're kind of forcing the hand and now you're out there, you know?
Yeah. You're giving out that Google juice. Like some of it is like copyright. Some of it is like IP, intellectual property, where they can't just expose themselves out. Like that's how they're making their money. You want me to tell you exactly like this, the magic trick? You want me to tell you the magic trick? I'm gonna steal. Right. The next thing you know, they're gonna countersue them.
Right.
Google gonna count. Next thing you're gonna hear, France is being sued by Google for giving out their magic tricks.
Right. Showing the sleight of hand. I was like, you know, you say you're trying to take the Google juice, man. Like, just sit back and enjoy the show, man.
I mean, part of this is just like the EU just been tripping lately in general.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They going after everybody they possibly can. So, like, they probably was like, you know what, France, instead of the EU taking this one whole, let's France just do it by themselves and we'll come at them on another thing in a couple of weeks. Like, they trying to grab all that money again, because part of it is that they complaining about how these Silicon Valley companies are so like dominant that the EU can't make money, whereas just America making money. China, and like in that argument, you gotta be like, how is China not making money? I mean, how is China making all this money and then the EU not? So it can't be just straight competition. The EU just gotta step it up. Nah. But the EU just like, you know what, we wanna just sue everybody. Fuck it.
Right. the EU by way of France is still in Google for.
Yeah, that's what it's saying. The EU by the way of France. That's basically what that is.
It just comes down to, you know, they got to get their muscle up, man. It's a it's an American way. You know what I mean? It's at its root, it's capitalism at its finest, man. Like, capitalism is constantly run by, you know, people that don't understand our customers, pretty much. Yeah. That's what it is. And if you don't get it, then that's on you.
If you're not a hustler, you're a customer.
There you go.
I mean, that's basically what it is. I mean, they like, man, we don't like this. We're going to call the police.
Right.
That's basically what that is, man. But all right, let's go to this last article about Google Stadia. I dream about Google Stadia. I'm just not ready to get it yet. But Google, after their bumpy launch, Google Stadia forged ahead by adding indie developer Typhoon. That article title doesn't really say much, but essentially, the Typhoon gaming company, a company called Typhoon, who's made like a lot of like single player, like create your own world type games.
Yeah. Didn't they make the amusement park joint back?
That's the main thing I remember.
Yeah, I remember that. Liked that, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a lot of like the small, they technically smaller games. They're not like the AAA title games, but they hella addictive. Like you go in there and spend like 10 hours, like 40, 50 hours just creating your own little thing. And like, apparently Google just went ahead and bought them out and made them part of the Stadia, the gaming service, which is probably like the best, the first deal that Google basically has made with buying a gaming company.
Gaming company. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good move too, because I think with Google Stadia, I ain't taking spice, bro, but yeah, like, I think they probably need to go in that direction. At first, it's going after like a casual market where they know people, like certain companies are specialized on developing games where they know people spend an abundant amount of time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the average person will, you know, if you come home from work, the average Joe, you know, from his IT job will come home and want to take care of his amusement park or his military base or something like that he's been building up just to see what happens.
Right.
So by them acquiring a company that focuses on stuff like that, I think it's a good move in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's just a good move in general, just because of the fact that it's showing that it's not just about AAA titles. It's not just about console games. Mm-hmm. Like Typhoon, they basically make like PC games. Like they don't really jump out on the console, and they also do mobile games. They definitely become mobile heavy for a while. Like, but they focus on these more creative games, like creative world building type games. And it's showing that Stadia is not just about doing these third party adventure or first person shooters and all this stuff. It's really trying to be the stadium of all games, essentially. And it's really, I think it's more like a good faith buy. I think it's like one of those things where it's just it's like one of the things, like, we're gonna buy this because it's Typhoon is one of those companies that everybody loves.
It's a sure shot.
it's like we definitely gonna get a win with this. It's no way you can lose doing this. It's nothing that you can really complain about with going the Typhoon route. Stadia offer, they have a partnership with Ubisoft. Matter of fact, they talk about it in here. That they have an article with you, a partnership with Ubisoft, where they're basically going to put every Ubisoft title on Stadia. So it's already pre-planned. Like they have every title that has been and going forward, they're basically going to put in the Stadia platform as well. And Google doesn't really stop with any of those platforms. I mean, they really just talking about trying to get this whole cloud system running by any means necessary. And it's not really about being the dominant player for consoles. They really just want to get everything in the cloud as much as possible. like they have an overall perspective. Like, you know, Xbox and PlayStation really want to get to be like, they really just focus on the games. And Stadia is like, Google's like, yeah, we want to focus on the games, but we want to focus on every game.
Yeah.
I mean, like every game possible.
I think this as a general business principle, like when you're trying to, like, we're going to acquisition, it's almost like network marketing, right? Like I've tried several different things, and they always, the message tends to be the same, where we're starting off, it's always good to go wide rather than go deep. You know what I mean? Right. Like, so I feel like what they're doing is, rather than trying to go deep into like, oh, we're trying to specialize in first person shooters or something like that, where, you know, people have not only that, the loyalty with that is always going to be an Xbox versus, you know, PlayStation type of thing in some ways. Like, rather than trying to jump into that and then everybody shooting at you, let's just go wide to see all, we can acquire all of these things. And then whatever sticks, we can focus on. Like, that just makes sense, man.
They're probably going to take all the PC gamers, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody that plays Civilization, anybody that plays Sims or SimCity or any of that, they're going to get all of them in there, get them all
into the cloud.
In the cloud. And then later on in this next gen that comes out, they'll get all of the AAA title gamers going.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, they even talk about this auto, like, they say after the bumpy launch, it still really hasn't launched yet. Like, they had a beta release that came out. They call it the Founders Edition because it's definitely an alpha. Like, y'all, everybody that bought it, y'all the pioneers in this.
It's beta, but it's an alpha.
I mean, like, the real release don't happen until March. So, like, if you ain't get that Founders Edition, you can't play nothing yet. I mean, so, like, once that actually comes out, then I want to hear, like, the real complaints. But right now it's just Google doing what Google does, which is just like drop a whole bunch of tech and see what shakes for it.
Right.
I mean, like, they don't really have, they don't, like you said, their messaging is off. They really have an issue with communicating what they're saying. They just like, here, for the tech guys, for the developers, we got all this shit for you. We'll leave it up to y'all to do something with it.
Right. And it's good. I mean, see, it's smart, man. Like, they're playing it smart. Like, they're getting the criticism and stuff like that. But see, from a marketing standpoint, a businessman, like, a problem that's presented is a way to make money rather than something that, you know, it stumps you, right? So if the idea of when they drop this stuff and they, like, they're getting all these complaints, well, it's like, okay, they're Google, you know what I mean, at the end of the day, so it is what it is. And like, it's not like they're going to go nowhere. They'll just force it to work, right? But like, based on the responses they get back from the market, you know, they'll then say, all right, well, okay, they complain about not having this on there or not having that, so we'll repackage it and redistribute it in this way to cater to what this audience is saying. Then go, again, same thing, see what the market says, right? Go back to the drawing board. So, I mean, they plan it, just, you know, they're in a, what they call it, like an MVP process right now. As soon as they, you know, they get that refined and they super build it, you know, people won't be on it, man. Like,
it makes too much sense. I'm waiting for, like, I don't even really plan on it being a thing yet. And I'm waiting for it to actually, like, jump off. Like, I'm in a Stadia group for people that get them and got them and are enjoying them. And like, I see the fun, the pros and cons that they already have with it, but I know myself, I'm not even getting into that until like the 5G era. Like, when everybody has 5G phones, it's going to be like 2025 sometime. When everybody gets the 5G phones and everything's real time, all the great technology that everybody dream of is here now. Like, VR is becoming a thing again. Yeah, I mean, because as it becomes a thing within again and like people start using it, then I'll go ahead and try to hop in Stadia and check it out. But right now, I'm just enjoying the tech, and I'm part of their development community, so I can actually see like how the stuff actually is getting built out. And when I get back to actually doing some game development stuff, I'll participate in it. But like right now, I'm just enjoying the technology and seeing the competition. So this is because Xbox is doing the same thing, PlayStation is doing the same thing. Amazon's is plotting on doing a gaming service.
Yeah, they plotting. And, sitting in the clutches.
Yeah,
they camping right now.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you got to watch them because they always be in the cut too with stuff. Like, Amazon got a great sales team. You know what I mean? So, like, all they got to do is build the tech and then they'll run around. They'll run like crazy to get the sales going, to get people to start actually developing on it. So, like, watching them and seeing what they do. Apple has the Apple Arcade system, which is nothing like any of these cloud gaming services, but they sell it like it is. So it's going to be fun seeing all this stuff that's happening in the next couple of years with it.
We're going to see the warfare go down, man, because once they get the cloud, look at it. Once they get that cloud popping, then everybody's going to try more. I think so. Sony going to try. It's going to happen, bro, sooner or later.
Yeah, like I said, it's going to be those games that can only be played in the cloud. It's going to be those games that don't really work in console worlds. And that's stuff that you really is hard to explain. It's more you got to like theorize it because it don't exist yet.
Right. Yep.
But that's about it, B. If y'all like this show, man, go ahead and do that damn thing, man. Like that button, hit that comment, go ahead, subscribe, share all the stuff. We on your socials, we on your Facebook. I think I might do a Twitter. I don't know. I was contemplating doing a Twitter. It ain't really, I don't know. The Twitter world's kind of interesting. They got that World War III going on right now.
Yeah, man. That's the best way to put it, man. Twitter is like, you know,
they're not really the wholesome Facebook world that people see, but like they got some good stuff going on there, but then they got some weird stuff happening. But I'm thinking we might hit the Twitter scene as well. But you can always find us on any of your streaming services. So if you got the iTunes, you got the Google, you got the Spotify, whatever, Stitcher and all that, you can definitely find us on there. We on Facebook, we on the YouTube. And we on everything, essentially. You can find us. Just Google us and we'll be there. And make sure you like, subscribe, and stuff like that so that you don't have to Google us again. We'll just notify you. We'll just knock on your door. We'll knock on your cell phone.
Like, subscribe, and go to notifications, man.
Yeah, them notifications, man. That's where they be hitting at the best. That's how you really know. But you got anything to say, Mike?
Nah, man, that's subscribe or die. I'm gonna make a t-shirt. Y'all gonna see me with a t-shirt on and see that next time, man. Yeah, subscribe or die. That's where we at, man. We got heat coming your way, and it's gonna keep getting better and better, man. So I want y'all to, all our loyal listeners, you know, just jump on board, and we're gonna go some places, man. So, yeah, stay in tune.
Yeah, man, y'all take it easy out there.
All right, peace.